This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Hey, dive into the minds of three incredible industry trainers that are in the studio with me at the 2022 Vision KC High Tech Training and Expo. Hey, we had no agenda, just some friends chatting with a special dynamic and their passion for the advancement of the aftermarket. Now, some of what we covered, what are their perspectives on electrical theory, becoming a trainer, and training in general. You'll also hear talk about business culture, mentoring, and so much more. From the Aftermarket Radio Network, Carm Capriotto here, Remarkable Results Radio Podcast. Profound fun awaits you. And thanks to our partner Napa for providing you this episode. The Napa Expo will be held July 18th through the 21st at the Venetian Convention and Expo Center in Las Vegas. Stay on the forefront of the latest technologies and industry trends. Registration opens in April 2022. Not enrolled and interested in attending? Contact your servicing Napa store for more information, and I'll see you there. Hey, a warm welcome to three really great industry trainers. I'll hold their name here for a minute, but remind you, we're at Vision 2022. We're also thankful to be back and shaking hands and fist bumping and hugging and all that stuff that happens when we kind of do post-COVID. Eric Ziegler is here. Gary Smith is here. Scott Schotten. I bet you you're happy to be back doing things in person.
Definitely. So happy to be back in person. The interaction, the networking already, and we've only been here a day. It's amazing. I'm so happy to be back.
This isn't your first live person event. I'm sure you're doing some small training things.
Some smaller things over COVID. You know, a couple small group, 30 guys at one shop. You know, at another shop, 3-4 people, some smaller things. But this is the first large training event since the whole onset of COVID. I'm starting to learn faces all over again. It's like after 2 years, I know that guy. What's his name? It takes me a minute. Thank God for name tags.
This morning, I had found out that they had 1,100 registrations in 2 hours.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, I know. A big event, and I was walking through some of the classes during breaks and recording. I mean, it's exciting to be here. Eric, what are you training? What are you going to be teaching?
I taught essential diagnostic steps this morning. We had to have 250, 300 people, was literally standing room only. I had a couple of people that came in that weren't with the class, but actually sat on the carpet in the back of the room. Matt Gundrich came in, and he was sitting in the back of the room when I looked. There were a couple seats up front, but it was pretty full. So I had a huge show of hands when I asked how many first-time attendees, and I think Scott said Sherry said she had around 500 plus.
I think she told me it was 750. Wow. Man. Somewhere in that range.
But man,
I can't swear to the exact number, but it's a phenomenal number, yes.
Yeah, I know. It's exciting to see. I think the industry has embraced vision to such an incredible degree to realize that you're going to come here and you're going to learn a lot, but you're also going to meet a lot of great people. I mean, the power of networking, guys. I mean, I saw you guys all at the bar. You had booths up. You were charging for kisses and all that stuff. It was amazing to see.
Sometimes you have to charge.
Yeah, I know. Eric gives it away, I'm sure.
You know, his wife's in the room, right?
Oh, that's right. Oh,
Debbie is in the house.
I'm sorry. She's behind you. I couldn't see it, so I will behave. Gary, you and I did one of the most interesting episodes that I probably ever did back in 2021 at ASTE. Can you just give us a quick run through? And we should try to look up what episode that was, Tracy, and tell everybody to go listen to it.
Sure, that was really a fun episode, Carm. That was awesome. We basically had a discussion about drawing an illusion between what technicians do and what the intelligence agencies do. And the subject behind it was SIGINT, signals intelligence.
Right.
And that's actually the nature of the class that I'm teaching tomorrow is measurement and signatures analysis. Let's move beyond the scope and how to hook it up and set it up for a signal, but let's really understand the signal that's coming across the screen and what physically makes it up. So that's kind of a quick recap of the class that I'm doing, and also a recap of the episode that we did is talking about human intelligence and signals intelligence and measurement intelligence all come into
the fact that we as automotive technicians are very clearly signal specialists.
It's just doing this one-on-one show, and I was sitting across from Gary, and this, like, he lost me, like, in the first 9 minutes. And I'm sitting there, you know, did you ever have that mouth open drool going? I mean, just listening to how he was trying to connect all these dots together, because that's what you were trying. You were trying to explain to me how it all worked.
Sure.
And it was episode 685. So even if you've got your player and you keep scrolling up and scrolling up and you can't find it, well, just go to my website, remarkableresults.biz, and type in 685 in the search bar, and it'll come up. And you owe it to yourself to listen to that episode. What are you teaching here, Scott?
Two classes this time. Sherry's got me working light. I did a Subaru class this morning with a new guy I brought, Leo Gilmore, who rocked the house. We did very well this morning. Had about 80-ish people in the classroom. And then tomorrow I'm teaching a hands-on class over at the college, a Picoscope class, with someone the podcast might know. I think his name is Matt Fonslow. So we're doing that one tomorrow.
Dropping names.
Yeah. That was my gig.
And you're so good at that. You are. I mean, I can sit across America and, you know, a five-minute little rant, he names five people off just because he can.
I don't know if it's just because I can, because I often think that if it's worthy for me to mention somebody's name, it's worthy to give them the respect due for the things of the influence they've had in my life. And I told people in my class today that, no joke, that coming to Vision the first time wasn't career-changing, it was life-altering. I met so many phenomenal people, and that's why I encouraged a lot of the young people that were out. I know we spoke a little bit about the attendee, Eric Dallas, that Scott and I had befriended in Cincinnati, Ohio, at a class we did at Ulmer's ADIS training facility. And we met this individual, and, like, he was all about the training and was hungry to learn. And we mentioned Vision, and he's like, I've never heard of Vision. And we kind of pointed him in the direction of Technicians of Tomorrow Scholarship, and he applied for it. And fortunately, he won one. And I saw him this morning at the club lounge on the 19th floor, and he was electric. He was so excited about being here. And that harkened me back to, you know what I mean, the people that were influences in my life about getting me here. And that obviously would have been John Thornton from the first time I saw him, had mentioned Vision. And then when I came, like, you meet people such as Gary and Scott, and I think I met Gary at ATE in Seattle.
And Carm.
I think I met Carm here the first time. But,
you know, it goes back to, you know, we're in episode 700 and something on Remarkable Results.
Congratulations.
When we add all the different brands, Carmcast, Aftermarket Weekly, Town Hall, there's over 1,000. But Eric, our first episode was 192. I think that was a very transparent episode of yours. I think you basically told your story. And if you've not heard Eric's story, please, you know, here we're dropping all these podcast episodes that people should listen to, because we've got new people listening all the time. And there are some people out there that are very loyal fans, but they forgot. And, you know, every once in a while I go back and I listen and I say, man, that was just a great story. So thanks for telling that. I mean, how about the other one? It was 4 years ago when Stormy came.
Oh, yeah, that did go full circle on that one.
Oh, my God. Is
Stormy Gashy.
Do me a favor, tell it, because then I want to put my spin on walking through that door. Go ahead.
One of the things that when I first went mobile full time, I often say that it can, when you're mobile, you can feel the weight of the world on your shoulders when you're doing, like, repair shop diag, which is a lot what Scott does now. We've kind of morphed into doing calibrations and programming and stuff. But at the time, I was fixing broke cars for shops, and I bet I had a half dozen of them or 10 cars in the queue that I couldn't figure out which end was up. I was on my way home. I tried it. I had pretty much made up my decision that I was done, and I was taking my football and going home. The phone rang, and it was a friend of mine, Adam Gashy, from Emporia, Kansas, who was a guy who kind of dabbled a little bit in mobile and worked at a two-stall quick oil change place in Emporia, Kansas. And he asked me if I knew anybody in St. Louis that, you know, did Diag. And I said, you know, no, I don't really off top of my head. He asked me how close I was to St. Louis, and I said, it's about 2.5 hours away. Do you have a family member's got a car down there for you? I drive down there and do it. And he said, no, I'm going to be spending some time there. I thought maybe I could work for you for a while. And I said, what's going on? And he said, my daughter Stormy needs a heart transplant. And so I had this, was having this pity party for myself, you know, poor me, poor me. I can't fix these cars. I'm going to quit and go home and get a real job again. And I will never forget when I walked in the door, our grandbaby is about the same age. So this would have been almost 10 years ago. Reese will be 10 in July. And so it had been 9 years ago. And my wife showed me a picture when I came through the door of my our first grandchild, and he was all smiles and everything else. And I had this juxtaposition, like, in what world does one baby be healthy and another one needs a heart transplant? And I was really shook to the core about it. And then it dawned on me that Adam, who is a former professional bull rider in the rodeo, you know,
he's a big guy,
Texas size, you know, mm-hmm. steak plate, belt buckle, cowboy hat, real deal, up at 4 o'clock in the morning, milking cows, feeding the chickens, kind of thing. Don't want no help from nobody. Very self-made man. It took a lot for him to reach out. And then I remembered his wife worked for Hostess, and they had scuttled the ship and said, you're going to take this contract or we'll decertify the union and we're going to fire everybody. Yeah, yeah. And he lost his health insurance. Mm-hmm. So here's this baby who needs a heart transplant. Here's Adam who works for a small two-hole shop with no health insurance, and they don't have health insurance. And I was like, do you have Cobra? And he's like, the Cobra's $1,800, E. Like, I guess I could probably sell the rental house and maybe make a month of that. And I get a little beclamped when I talk about it, but it was the proudest moment mm-hmm. as an automotive technician. And I went, and I knew that he wanted no help from nobody. And we had a Skype room going with probably 20 people. The late, great Harvey Chan was a member of the room, and Travis Wolf, and Mike Marshall, a bunch of mobile technicians all across the country. And we raised in 72 hours, unbeknownst to him, like 10 grand to wow. pay for the Cobra for this. And like it was exceptional. And he did not know about it. And when I did it at Vision, I asked Sherry, I said, you know, is this possible? I know you got a no solicitation policy. Could I, at the end of class, tell this story? And this is before GoFundMe or anything else like that. And Kai Fanastale from Now with Mobile Auto Solutions set up a Facebook page. And Jennifer Wolf is Travis Wolf's from Wichita, Kansas, is an accountant. So she set up this bank account or whatever so people could make donations via Facebook. Again, pre-GoFundMe. And I'll never forget, we did this, and I did it at every class I taught. And I taught 4 classes. Sherry gave me the green light to do it. And I did this 2-shot PowerPoint slide, and I said, it was a picture of my grandson and a picture of Stormy, who had these iridescent blue eyes, very much akin to the Time Life Pulitzer Prizing Afghanistan girl with the green eyes that just kind of looked right through you. Yeah, yeah. And I put a 2-slide on there, and I told that story. And I said, if you got a dime, give a dime. You got a dollar, you got a 10, you got a 100, whatever you give. If you got nothing else, give these people your thoughts and prayers or whatever. And I had a gentleman after the first class I did it, after I got done, I was pretty weepy myself, but when I got done, there wasn't a dry eye in the room. And somebody went, and I'll never forget, somebody hung out and asked a couple questions about class, where a couple of people gave cash donations. There was somebody that said, I need to talk to you about what you said at the end of class. Can I close the door? And I was like, yeah. And I said, I'm sorry if I offended anything. He goes, no. He goes, it just reminded me a lot of my daughter. And I was thinking, you know, he was going to, and I just instinctively off the cuff said, well, how old is she? And he said, she would have been 7 last month. And he had gone through the same thing. He had a $100 bill in his hand. He gave me that, like, drug dealer's handshake, had a little tear out of his eye. And he said, you make sure Adam gets this. And his name was Frank Steffel out of Shawnee, Wisconsin. And I think he's now in Wausau. But another mobile guy, fabulous friends. I met him that day. And he's attended some of my automotive seminars classes. But I say all the time, the finest people I've ever met are in this industry.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
to that whole thing that happened with Stormy, yeah. Cueing back to you, throwing the ball back to you.
Well, it was you telling the story, and I don't know if you told it on a podcast, but that Adam was listening to the podcast that we did, shopping with Stormy, and he heard you tell the story.
Yeah, and he had no idea I was going to do it at Vision either. So he had signed up for all the classes, and he wasn't taking my class. I taught a J2534 programming class, and he was already programming. So he's like, yeah, I'm not taking that or whatever. And he sat in on some class, and he goes, I didn't like it, so I bailed on it. So here I am, and I have 150 people in this J2534 class, and I'm like, he's sitting front and center. And I'm like, I know he hasn't said anything to me about it, so I don't think he knows what's going on or whatever. And then I ended the class, and I'm like, do I do it? Do I don't do it? And I was like, I'm doing it. And like, I looked, and he's like, you know, drunk woman, mascara crying in the end. Yeah. And he's like, doesn't even swear. He's like, G-D-U-E-Z. And there were people that came up and gave him money. There were people that, there was one individual that came up and looked a little rough and tumble. And he said, I don't have any money. And he said, I just got out of Leavenworth prison. And I thought, oh boy, here we go, right? And he said, I found Jesus Christ in a prison cell. He said, I'm an ordained minister. I don't have any money to give you, brother, but I will give you my prayers and my thoughts. So, again, I stand by what I said. Some of the most phenomenal people, not only professionally and being able to do it, but at a personal level. Yeah. That story is never told.
It's right. Very difficult to hear that story and not get a lump in your throat.
Mm-hmm. I do every time I tell it.
So Adam hears the podcast, calls you, and I can't remember how many years ago, but we're sitting in this room, the door is open, and Adam is with Stormy.
And he's got her on his, sitting on his shoulders. I remember the picture of it, like it was yesterday. And he is due. He will be here today.
Oh, cool.
So you can do a follow-up on that, and he will browbust me for that. Like, really? I had to talk to Carm again? Like, yeah, tell your story.
No, at least come by and say hi.
And by the grace of God, that little girl did not need the heart.
Yeah,
like,
right.
You know, and she has more energy. The cardiologist would say, like, oh, her numbers are down. And, like, she would just be running around the room, and he was she looks pretty fine to me. So
thanks for telling that story.
Hey, have you visited the NAPA AutoCare member site lately? Well, since its relaunch in 2020, the NAPA AutoCare member site has continued to evolve to keep members updated on all the NAPA programs, promotions, member benefits, and business building tools to help your business thrive. Some features to the member site include never miss an update, stay current with notifications and announcements on the homepage, and view the dashboard featuring your shop's financial status. Also, take advantage of cost-saving member exclusive promotions and a faster automated 24/24 peace-of-mind warranty submission process. Submit re-repair claims directly on the member site and easily check the status there as well. Now, typically, the claim is settled and EFT or credit card payment is sent within 48 hours. Turn searches into a new customer with a referral tracker. Now learn more about how a consumer NAPA online search for your shop can generate new customers at no additional cost to members. Use this popular customer tool to evolve your marketing strategies and to get the most business value. Own more than one NAPA AutoCare? Link all your facilities to one login and access all the facilities to one user. You can also access the Shop NAPA Helm or Pro Office website directly. You can also submit a Pro Image free look for a sneak peek at how you can co-brand your locally known name with a nationally recognized NAPA brand. Also, submit online ASE certification renewal and test reimbursements. You also get exclusive access to dozens of industry-leading programs and solutions. Now, if you're a NAPA Auto Care member, visit member.napaautocare.com to access the member portal and take advantage of these many member benefits today. Now, if you're not a NAPA Auto Care Center, contact your servicing NAPA Auto Parts store to learn more about how to join the NAPA family.
Gary, what are you seeing from the techs? You're out there, you're training. You are an electrical specialist. I mean that's your gig is electricity, right?
That's what I love. Yeah. That's my passion for sure.
And does our industry guys really respect the fact that they should be renewing? It's like watching reruns of I Love Lucy, or just pick one of your favorite old shows and you'd well, I saw sure. this again, but I'll watch it again, okay?
Sure.
I continue to hear that over and over from everybody that you gotta just keep going and keep learning.
Yes. Yes. For the last 2.5 years since we've been doing the hotline, the diagnation.com remote diagnostic assistance line, the nature of my class tomorrow is because I got a big smack in the head realization looking at some of the numbers from the calls that come in to our group. And it struck me as I was doing year-end analysis last year that 85% of all of the high-tech, toughest cases, meaning the ones that I would call deep study cases where
sure.
you're scoping it for 10 or 14 hours trying to find that little problem, you know, 85% of those faults that we're getting called on have simple fixes. And I'm talking rooted in basic electrical. And I don't bore people with Ohm's Law because everybody rolls their head when you say Ohm's Law, but that's a fact. We broke it down, and we have a situation where we've got the main overriding faults in these cars, even the toughest ones when we come down to it, are high resistance in a wire, a broken wire, a missing fuse, right?
Absolutely.
Simple as that, yep. or a bad ground.
Yeah. Occam's razor.
Yes, yes. And why we're here is to get that message out to the guys. You know what? You can go to all the Mercedes-Benz classes, Subaru classes. You know, in other words, the manufacturer-specific stuff's really important for guys to know for sure, right? Because that gives us an insight into what we're working on. But guess what? Every one of those cars, the nuts and bolts, the signal intelligence coming in that module and out of that module is exactly the same, no matter whose badge is sitting on the front of that car. And if we can ground ourselves, in other words, we get out-teched. We out-tech ourselves all the time.
Wait a minute. Was that word ground there on purpose?
I was going to say, was that a fun, but I was waiting for a pause.
I was like, your analysis? What's going on there?
Like, I didn't mean to interrupt your train of thought.
No, that's fine. But I mean, what I was going to say, and I interrupted myself, was that if we could just ground ourselves back into the basics and not out-tech ourselves with all the high-tech theory of what's going on in the ADAS cars and everything else, 90% of the answers are on the screen right in front of us if we take the time to go back to the basics to learn that. See, every one of us in this industry in one way or another got jumped over that.
A PM generator is a PM generator.
That's right. And we got jumped over those basics. You know, when I came into the business, I was 18 years old. I was at a Cadillac store. We had Tech One that was for the first C4 cars. My inculcation into electricity is, hey, kid, go plug this in on this socket and turn it on, and I'll come over and tell you what to do. And that was how I was introduced to diagnostics. I wasn't introduced to diagnostics by an instructor teaching the fundamentals of electricity and how to test it and what it looks like coming across the screen. And 15 years later, as you think you're a good tech, you suddenly start to realize what you don't know. And that's the passion that I think, well, at least I speak for myself, but I know for these guys too, because I know them, that's their passion, is to bring that out to the industry in a big way.
Another comment that's been said before too, and I think we'll all agree, and it's probably been said on the podcast before, once you become a trainer, and you have to explain these basic electrical concepts to whether it's an entry-level high school student, a college student. You know, I've been in both situations, or another tech or a training situation like this. If you have to explain it, that just makes you a better tech.
Yes.
It helps you understand it more. Yes. So that was one of the best things I ever did for my mechanical diagnostic part of my life, was become a trainer, because it made me a better diagnostician.
Sure.
Isn't it true? Everyone says that when you teach, you learn.
Oh, absolutely.
Very much so.
It's the message to everyone who's here, who's listening, no matter what level. I don't care if it's an owner, service advisor, technician. Please go back and find someone. Grab them. Says, listen, let's have lunch together. I need to tell you what I learned. I got to read some of my notes to you to refresh my mind. And while I'm speaking that, I'm going to have synapses going off to solidify sure. some of the learning.
Sure. As you know from previous episode, and you know me, I'm a ham radio operator.
Oh, my God. He's a go.
And I'll tell you, I want to make something really clear about the guys I'm sitting with here.
Yeah.
Okay, these guys are, and all the guys that come to teach with passionate vision. In the ham radio world, your mentor is called an Elmer, and that comes from a history.
I'm a Gomer. He's an Elmer.
Yeah, he's an Elmer. He's a Gomer.
I'm right. a ham. He's a radio. He's a ham radio.
He's the ham radio Elmer. Yeah, Gomer, Gopher. But, you know, I take the term Elmer pretty seriously. It's a funny backstory how it happened. I won't bore you with it, but it was back in the 1920s, and the mentor for all the ham radio operators back in 1912 was known as Elmer. Must have been some smart guy on radios named Elmer, but in our business, in our hobby, the ham radio hobby, if you're a mentor of teaching somebody how to come into the ham radio world and understand the RF waves, he's your Elmer.
Okay.
Well, you know, we have such a great, broad experience level with the Elmers we have in this business. If you want to look at it as automotive Elmers, right? Everybody, you know, that comes to these shows really, it comes to learn from these guys. And what Scott was just saying about teaching yourself by becoming an instructor, you know, it forces us to research things we wouldn't do in the Bay. Would you agree?
I would totally agree.
And that helps us to be good, you know, good mentors and what I would call good Elmers to the guys out there. It's a fantastic network to belong to.
Super simple example is voltage drop. Technicians have problems with voltage drop, understanding it. And before I was a teacher, I thought I understood voltage drop. And then when I had to explain it to someone, I had to figure it out and realized I'm not correct. That's why I misdiagnosed this particular car 2 years ago, because I did the voltage drop test wrong. So again, you teach yourself,
yep.
Because you got to make sure you're disseminating the correct information to the attendee or the college student or whatever. Absolutely. The case. It makes you better.
Absolutely.
You know, part of my passion is advancing the aftermarket, no matter what level. If it's business management, leadership, if it's technology, technicians, if it's really trying to state the case for training and investing in training yourself, your team, your business. We had Vinny Lucido on earlier, and I asked him, what did he spend to bring seven of his people and himself here? What did he budget for the whole thing? He said $30,000. They had to fly here. Closed the shop, $30,000.
That's significant for a shop owner.
Travis Troy, they could drive here, $20,000. Okay, and he says between his two shops and his $4 million business, he probably has a $100,000 budget for mentoring and coaching and all of those. So glad we had a chance to tell those stories of that level of investment. And the reason you're here is that you're the giver of this information that people come here for. We talk about electricity because I keep hearing they are the lessons that people need to hear often. And we've heard that trainers will put a title like advanced electricity for the basic technician to maybe get right. Someone to sign up for it.
Right.
I guess what I want to know, having stated all that, is do you see the breakthroughs happening in class? Do you see lights coming on?
So you hope to. I often say, training-wise, I get as much as I give. They always say I always start my class out by saying the first goal of public speaking is to be the smartest guy in the room.
No.
90% of the time I can look around and like I fall way short of that bar. So I make it perfectly known to the class. I don't want to stand up and pontificate or preach or whatever. I would just assume moderate a town hall. Mm-hmm. Makes my job easier. I don't have to listen to my monotone voice for 4.5 hours. And there's always somebody in there that brings a valid point up that I may not know the answer to. I am not one of those instructors. And Scott and I have talked about this for years early on, that if we don't know, we don't try to baffle you with BS. We're like, that's a very good question. I don't know. But what I am fortunate enough to know is that I have the ear of a lot of really, really smart people. Can you post that to me in an email and I will direct it to somebody. We'll get an answer for you. Yeah. But yes, you do see the connection a lot of times, especially in the younger people. It seems to be a mixed bag. They're either kind of there or I have a conversation with my 10-year-old grandson about being present, being in the moment. Yeah. You know, he's very, you know, attention at deficit, but he always, you know what I mean? I try to, you know, get him to like realize where you are, what you're around, you know what I mean? And to absorb. And he's super, super intelligent, but he's always just got to be one thing after another. So the young people that do come that are engaged, I think are people that are in the moment really benefit from it. And to the business side of it, I've got a friend who's got a phenomenal shop in College Station, Texas, Kirk Holland with Gladney Automotive Services. He requires all of his employees to attend 100 hours of training a year. And there's, wow. You know, different things that you can get there. He pays full boat for you to come to Vision, to attend, you know, a NAPA class. There's also ways that you can participate in, like, Diag.net and Diagnation, places like that, to make up those hours. But there is a culture of learning, which was, of course, the late, great Bob Greenwood, another great one we lost, that, like, you have to install that culture in your shop, and that it is the new new moving forward, right?
So another perspective on my question, asking you guys about breakthroughs and lights coming on. When we hold an electrical class, Gary, Scott, Eric, do people sign up?
Yeah. As long as it doesn't have basic in the title, they'll sign up.
Okay. Ah, so we figured that out.
Yes.
Frankly, what you're tossing on them is Ohm's Law.
You know, a lot of basic electrical classes that'll cover that. And you have to be careful saying people are beyond Ohm's Law, because nobody is. Not even the engineers that are bringing these cars together are beyond Ohm's Law, okay? But it is a subject that technicians hate to hear about. You know, I think for me, you know, the answer to your question about do guys get it when you're bringing that across the table in the class, I think yes, to the extent that they can at the level that they're at. Would you agree? They'll pick up on that. For example, I had a guy just hit me in the hallway, and he goes, "Man, I haven't seen you in 5 years, and it's great to be back." And he goes, "You know, I still have the first class I sat of yours. I still have that book, and I still use that method to catch this problem all the time."
Oh, cool.
And, you know, so for me, when I heard you ask that question, the answer, I think, is yes, they do get it, but they're going to get what they get based on the level of where they are technically.
Yeah, okay. Do our technicians leave training like this and then assess, I need more work in this area, and I can't wait to take a local or a video or an online, and then come back here and maybe do a repeat? Again, you're talking to techs. You're in the shops. Is this what's happening?
Sometimes. Sometimes they hold that interest for, you know, weeks. Sometimes after a couple of days, they lose it. It all depends on the tech and their passion in general, right? We've also had problems because we haven't had in-person training. My opinion, in-person is the best. So if they can go to regular training, it keeps them active, keeps them interested, keeps them moving on. So a month later, they go to another class and they learn some new information. It keeps them rolling. Granted, we had plenty of online training and things, virtual things of that nature. So, I mean, it kind of depends on the culture of training in the shop. You know, the shop foreman, the shop owner or something has to keep pushing. They shouldn't have to, but from what I've seen, in many cases they have to for your average, right? If I could go back for just a second to that light going off.
Yeah.
Okay? And we can relate this to teaching style and things like that. I'll keep it short. If we're not talking about electrical, Eric and my classes tend to be very case study heavy, meaning they're cars that we actually worked on during the day and have a real problem, and it might be something simple as a corroded wire or pin tension electrical, or it could, you know, it doesn't matter what it is. And a lot of the lights that I see go off in the classroom is when you talk about a particular vehicle to illustrate a point. We have a little bit of theory. We say, throw this vehicle out here. Let's talk about the scan data. Let's talk about the scope capture. Let's talk about the voltage drop reading. And then we end up coming to the conclusion of what fixed the car. Quite often, someone in that room, whether they say anything or not, you'll see them light up. Or they'll come up to you at break time and go, "I just had that last week, and I spent 4 hours on that car. And if I would have known that or understood that concept 2 weeks ago, I would have had that car done in a half an hour." And those are some great, rewarding moments for the trainer.
Absolutely.
You know, because the light goes on, you know.
It's been interesting on our side, instructor-wise, and, I'm sure these guys will agree if they're doing it or not, but, you know, Scott brought up something that the in-person training is best, and I totally agree with that. However, when we got involved in the COVID era, and there were all these webinars going on, you know, WorldPAC was running them, CTI was running them, people started to get a little bit burned out on them. I started hearing that from people. They were like, "Yeah, you know, they're all right, but I mean, you know, there's only so many nights a month you can sit and watch in your living room." So, you know, one thing that I found to be really interesting is during that time, because we couldn't visit shops, we, on the Diagnation site, we started getting good instructors together, and look, we put a product out there that said, look, if you want to learn how to use your lab scope and you don't want to wait for vision or the next event, come on Diagnation.com, pick your instructor, pick your lab scope, and schedule an event. You know what? We've been doing tons of those. Where
are they, one-on-ones?
One-on-ones with the shop. So we get the guys, they buy a pizza, they put five or six of their techs in front of a big terminal. We have a live scope on the car, and we do a lesson, just as if the instructor was standing there. But what I'm finding is the shop owners are really, really embracing that concept, Carm, because they're able to get four or five guys with a couple-hour quality session done on the car, live, hands-on, and not have to send people away for half a day or travel to a class. So I think that the COVID thing kind of, it allowed us as an industry to kind of blend a hybrid model here where we actually, with the age of technology, we can reach out and work with your client in College Park, Texas, or wherever the heck they
College are. Station.
College Station, sorry. Down by Houston, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what's neat is if he had to come on and do some homework with him or whatever, instead of traveling all the way down there for a fresh session, you can go ahead and make a blended hybrid session like that. So I just wanted to interject that that's something that's kind of really new that's come out of COVID, is the ability to do remote connect hands-on training right out of shop.
It forced a lot of change, a lot of creativity.
It did.
And the platforms that really took off, like Zoom platforms and,
yes,
and Teams meetings and things of that nature, yep, finding new ways to use those. And think about how many companies now are getting rid of their office buildings because they figured out that their employees can be just as productive from home.
Right.
Not have to travel.
Right.
And not have to pay rent or maintain an office building. So office space is gone. I mean, there's a lot of changes. I mean, two of my kids, almost three, basically work from home in their 20s.
Sure.
And like, I could never have imagined that,
It's hard to imagine it now.
Yeah. It is. Well, I mean,
hard to imagine my kids are that old. But
there's a lot of, it ain't going back to the way it was.
The TPMS, right? Kid was what? We were talking about that last night. No. He was what, eight when
he was eight. Now he works with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers.
Yeah, nice.
Whoa.
There was a video Scott shot on the TPMS learning, and his son Cameron was 8 years old, and it was like, so easy a child could do it. Put it in learn mode, and here's a little 8 year old Cameron going, with the TPMS tool, activating him.
Yeah,
I love it. And like I said, now he's a college graduate.
Yeah, and that was foreign to many people back then.
Yeah.
It was new then, yeah.
Yeah, it was new. How'd you guys survive COVID? I mean, the fact that you earned your living, both not only being mobile guys and trainers, but I think all those training sessions and first part of COVID were free. Now, I don't know if you got paid or you didn't, but you guys were probably, lighting votive candles for a long time waiting for this to go away.
Yeah.
How'd you survive?
I was fortunate enough, my mobile company stayed busy throughout. We had, a slow first quarter and 2020,
mm-hmm,
and it came roaring back like then. In Illinois, anyway, technicians were deemed essential, and I gave my guys the option, if you're fearful or don't feel comfortable with it, I will pay to stay home.
But didn't you move to Florida?
I do live in Florida.
Okay, but you still have?
I still have a company in Illinois.
Perfect, okay.
And the boys stay rather busy. They are en route. They should be here about 7 o'clock. The default is Brian. They're both named Brian. One with an I, one with a Y. But no, I'm very blessed to have those people. I never say in my employ because nobody works for me. They all work with me. And I mean that.
Yeah.
In every truest sense of the word, that it's a team. We're a family business. And yeah, we've been growing and growing and growing. We've been looking to add another third tech for about a year and a half. But they don't grow on trees doing mobile diag and doing program and stuff like that. Right.
That takes a special, yeah, it definitely takes a special person to do that.
How about you, Scott? I think you told me that you were teaching and then you weren't.
Yeah, right in the beginning of COVID, right before COVID, is when I left the college full-time to go full-time mobile and with the intent of doing more training around the country. Well, COVID messed that up, so yeah, my full-time mobile took up part of that gap.
You're full-time mobile?
Well, three quarters time.
Mostly full-time.
His three kids plus himself gets to work from home.
Other things like writing classes, a magazine article here and there, keeping busy. The schedule is very flexible. Some weeks are good, some weeks are bad. You just have to be responsible and accept the fact that sooner or later it's going to come around. I also did some smaller group training, which we alluded to before. So, for example, GM, their Picoscopes became a factory tool, and I've had a couple GM dealers hire me in different states where I would drive out and spend a day with them and teach them the basics of using a Picoscope, because they're used to being voltmeter heavy, DVOM heavy. So we did some basic scope stuff for them. A couple of shops, Tara Topol, Topol's in, sure. in Wisconsin. Sure. I've been out to her a couple times, and she's got three or four techs. They've gone through some changes with their building being built, and I think she was also female yep. shop owner
yes.
of the year at
yes,
Apex,
she was.
Right?
Yes, she was.
So I've been out
now
there a couple
dropping
times
names.
Training there.
To, yeah.
Well, she's been on the show.
Absolutely. Yeah.
She's yeah. a cool
it's not
alumna.
A name drop. Yeah. It's not a name drop if she's, it's relevant, right?
That's right. That's yeah, right. So I mean, I did keep busy. It was sporadic. So, yeah. you know, 1 month I might have two classes. I might go 2 months with nothing.
All right. You know, the fact that you could pick, you know, to have Eric work with you on a Pico one-on-one is really cool.
It's huge.
But I'm in an independent owners group in Buffalo, and just recently, and in fact, I've been talking about this for a long time, specific specialty training that you hire the trainer to come in, you go into the shop on a Saturday, Friday, however the logistics aren't important, but it's getting five or six shops together with two or three techs each to come in to not only afford this thing, but to bring training
right.
that's intimate. It, because to me, those smaller groups is where huge knowledge transfer happens. Am I right or wrong?
Sure.
I would agree. I mean, that's what the whole genesis of Scott and my joint venture with Easy Tech Mentors was yeah. about, was trying to, you know, elevate techs that you already have, that maybe have been with you for a while, that show up for work, that have good attitude, that maybe are great, you know, brake suspension, you know, nutsy boltsy techs, but you need to move them up to the higher level to get them to that. And all I think the other thing that I would add to what Scott said about our classes not only being real world case study, a blend between, we always say the Scott and Eric show. I have no pedigree in automotive. I've never had high school auto mechanics. I started out pushing a broom, so I'm just kind of like that punching bag that you had when the kid that had.
Comes back.
just, yeah, every time you hit it, just keeps coming
what,
back.
Was that called Bozo?
Bozo. Yeah, that's me. I'm Bozo, right? But I think the other thing that our classes add, or at least my stuff, is all based on the process. I would be a process guy, that being able, that's what today's class was all about. That's kind of what the, even though the ATIS class on Saturday is going to be kind of informational plus, you know, a little procedural, there's a process in doing the ATIS to make sure that you consult the OE service information to verify all the settings and things like that. My company does everything all OE. I know there are many different options to be able to do it. There's aftermarket tooling and stuff, but my business model has always been OE. But it's about having that process and having a logical step-by-step process. I think I'm doing fuel trims Saturday afternoon, which is all about being able to use fuel trims for your benefit step-by-step, to be able to know, hey, is it ignition misfire? Is it a fuel misfire? Is it a VE issue? Things along that line. But having that ability to one-on-one, that again, I think not to differ with Gary, but being able to see that puzzled look on somebody's face one-on-one, I'm one of those people that throws an example out, and I may not use it like a Grateful Dead show. No class is ever the same, right? I just know that it starts here, and the set list could be wherever, right? When I'll throw an allergy out, and maybe it made sense to me, and somebody gives me that, huh? And then you go, and you're like, oh, let me rephrase. And then you put it out there another way, and then you see the light bulb, the raised eyebrows, whatever. Then you know, like, oh, okay, now they get it.
Now I got
it. The other thing with that, having that small, intimate, hands-on, in-house training with four or five shops or whatever at a venue there where they feel comfortable, they're in their shop. You know what I mean? That you can.
Why isn't there more of that going on?
I do not understand for the life of me. When Harvey Chan suggested to me, we were in Las Vegas, right off of Fremont Street, at a steakhouse with Mike Miller, and Harvey's like, Eric, why would you go to Jacksonville? Why would you try to do mobile in there? And he was like, why would you do mobile in Jacksonville? It'd be too hard, Eric. You should do more training. You should do like technician mentoring. And a bell went off. I thought, somebody as smart as Harvey, A, number one, thought enough of me that I,
all right, guys,
that I could do it.
The coaching companies are developing masterminds around shop foremen, service advisors. You go down the list, and any shop owner that is growing his wealth, if you will, or his dream, his vision of growing either big shop mahals or multi-store, is getting training for their people. Yes, people are, the technicians are coming to Vision and maybe other locals, but why not the old tech mentoring thing? Think of the training that can happen. You have lunch hour Monday through Friday with a different tech from all around the country, and you do this once a month every 2 or 3 weeks. You could have 20 great technician clients that you're mentoring, and you're listening to them, showing them process systems, creative, clever ways, suggesting classes they should go to. Why hasn't this thing been on fire?
I think part of Gary's business model with Diagnation does that, you know, lunch hour thing very well. I think to the mega shops.
Do we need to find a bunch of shop owners that say, we're bought in, let's do this thing, and then we build, if you will, the case study of why this is working and the return on the investment?
I would be down. Dave Denman in Phoenix, Arizona was a shop that used us regularly. You had Dave and Caesar on, I believe, or Dave and Gerson.
Yeah, we did an episode with Dave and his people. Of course, he sold.
He did sell.
Yeah, and
there've been a lot. There's a lot of private equity money that is buying up shops. Yeah. There are a lot of. Yes. It's never been a better time for if you're a shop owner. Like Scott and I used to say, we would see guys in our shops that would be 75 years old, and they would go partially attending this because they loved the training. The other part of it is their shop is in the part of town that town moved away from, and they've got gas tanks in the ground, and it's not desirable for a 7-Eleven. And the reason they don't is they don't have a kid who wants to take it over, and it's their retirement, and whoever buys it wants to give them 20 cents on a dollar. Now we have these private equity firms that are coming in with large sums of cash.
But you got to have a good business to sell.
You got to have a good business to sell, absolutely. Yeah, but there have been a lot of really A-plus shops, many in the Chicagoland area, many in Phoenix, and a lot of those markets that have sold and has been very good for shop owners in that regard. So even the really passionate people that had really good shops are now taking that buyout, payout, whatever, and enjoying their time in the sun. Sure. But to the point with the big shops, I think like you have people like Christian Brothers that have many, many, many shops, and they have, I think it's Joe Hyde, I believe, is their director of training, that, you know, Scott Manna. Scott Manna himself sold his shop in Des Plaines, Illinois, which is rooted in Des Plaines forever, second-generation shop owner, and he took a job being a professional training curriculum developer for them. So kudos to Scott for it. So, I mean, absolutely. I think the big mega behemoth companies get it, and they can dictate it. I think it's hard in some ways for the little guy and some of the little guys that weren't really so little, that were small shops that had big, that did big numbers, some of those people sold. Yeah. And I think that
there's still a lot out there.
I agree. I would get no argument from me. I would love the phone to ring and the emails to come, and Scott and I do that.
You weren't in the room just before you came in here, but Greg Bunch was here. And everything you just mentioned in the last 45 seconds, we talked about. We talked about private equity. We talked about succession. In fact, did we talk about Dave? I can't remember. It was online or it was off mic. I don't remember. But yeah, and these stories of opportunities that are out there. But look, if you're not ready and you don't see that future yet for you, there's only one way you're going to help build the kind of bottom line that's going to really help. Great cultures, great customer experience. But if you don't know what to do when that car is in the bay, it's like, wow, wouldn't it be cool if I got a tech mentor? Let's continue this conversation on tech mentoring.
Sure.
Really would love to.
I have one little input for that. Why aren't we getting together more in the smaller five shop groups, right? It's just a little backstory, but in the Washington, D.C. market, I worked with a small association called WMDA, Washington, Maryland Dealers Association. And for 15 years, maybe 16 years, we were putting on local training in that market in the D.C. metro. So we'd have 4 or 5 points that we would go, you know, over the bridge to Virginia, up into Montgomery County, into downtown D.C., Baltimore, so forth. And we were doing, you know, diagnostic classes every month. We hit the strangest wall that to this day we haven't gotten over in the local market, and that is that the same 18 shops that were studying with us 15 years ago are still the only shops studying with us today.
Absolutely.
And it drives me crazy that these people in the industry are out here screaming for training. We need training. We need training. And you bring training, and they don't show up.
Back when we did live training, how I really got really the bug was going to my very first John Thornton Automotive Seminars class. And at that time, they did 23 locations throughout the Midwest. We had a group of the same people that always attended in my group in Peoria, Illinois. We had like 35 people. And this was almost 20 years ago. And it went from 35 to 28 to 21 to 18. And Tim said, if we don't get 16, John's not coming down. And there were classes on Volkswagen. There were really good classes that were on stuff that you couldn't learn online, that you couldn't do anything else. And you would actually go, and there would be 16 people, and they'd be like, oh, we had 15. We can't get one more. I'm going to cancel the class. And I'm like, I'll pay for two seats. Like, let's just get John to come down, exactly. Right? So that's just one of those things that, and then Automotive Seminars, when I went to work for them, did 21 cities, and by the time COVID hit, I think we were doing 16. I mean, there were whole towns in Indiana that were major college towns. I won't single out anybody's town that, like, our major metropolitan areas that, like, just had no more interest in it. In Ohio, and we're talking about John Thornton, yeah, who I think is probably one of the preemptive best trainers in the country.
Yeah.
And when you can't fill seats there, I think it's systemic of what's going on in our industry, as Gary said.
Well, the top guys are growing, the bottom guys are failing. What if those 18 were the most important 18 in the marketplace, Gary? Then you need to be happy about them.
They are, and we're very happy about them. I'm certainly not complaining. What I'm saying is the paradigm of why we can put out such a prolific training schedule for that many years. And, you know, let's just say we had those 18 or 20 or 30 shops, okay? Well, there might be 500, 800, 900 members within a WMDA network. Where the heck are all the other members that are in their meetings crying for training? I get it. You got to put the guy down for a couple hours of production. You got to pay for him to go to the class. He's going to be up late. He's going to be whining the next morning. Yeah. The drill, right? Yeah. But in this day and age, you would think that the smaller market trainings would draw far more people than they historically do. That's what really caught my attention with this Washington D.C. Metro thing. Is that same 18 every time?
So is it the culture of the business that doesn't put training on the front silver platter? Is it that we're not paying for the guys to go to class? Is it possibly that they're so exhausted at night that daytime may be better? And I'm not saying
it's probably
that these
a combination
are,
of
these
all
aren't
of that.
Excuses. Yeah. Right. These are conditions, if you will, of training.
Right.
When you're wired a certain way, and I think that we've had this conversation with you having a bias towards the industry or whatever, because everybody you talk to is the 1%. You don't have that deal with the technician apathy that the little girl that delivers parts at Napa goes in, and 80% of the people she talks about are like, I hate working on cars, blah, blah, blah. That cancer that's in the shop, that if we got the people that are in our circles or whatever are all wired to do this. Like, I can't imagine doing anything else. I mean, like, why did you? It's how we do, as the kids say. That if you are wired, it's the old adage, if you enjoy what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. Like, if you are wired to be a diagnostician, my wife always tells me, like, it's the difference. Some people look at it as just a job. I work on cars as a job.
Is that right, Dan?
Yes.
All right.
Is it your career? Is it your craft? When it's your craft, your career, it's like, you know, you're an accountant or whatever. You've got your bookkeeping degree. You are going to go get your accounting degree. Then you're going to get your MDA or MBA. You know what I mean? It's a progressive, sequential thing that you want to be the absolute best at the pinnacle of your craft, right? You want to be that master, that craftsman of things. Like if you're in a union job, you don't want to be an apprentice. You want to be a journeyman. You want to be a master journeyman. You don't want to, you know, do stud wall building for, you know, production houses. You want to do, you know, fine, you know, trim work on cabinetry. You don't want to lay floors. You want to do terrazzo, right? You want to be at that pinnacle of your thing. And those are the people that I think that a lot of us talk to when you're here at Vision. They come out of the woodwork. But to what Gary's saying about that, if you go in any shop anywhere in the middle America, in the deep South, wherever you go, you find a little two-hole converted gas station or whatever with a guy working there, he is probably not singing the praises of the automotive field, which is sad. It makes me sad. And I tell my story all the time because this career has gifted me so many things professionally, financially. And the one thing that I can never put a dollar sign on is the people that I've met. That's why you're kind of got a dream job. You get to talk to all these people. You get experience to them, but through the lens of they're like a very slim portion of society, of our automotive society. Yeah. What Gary's talking about, you try to put on great shows, you know, the Boys of Super Saturday, you know, tried to put everything together. One of the best shows I've done, the most fun I've ever done at a show is Super Saturday. I love that show. And they tried to go big in a couple of days, and partially it was COVID and things like that. And they called, they're like, so sad, we have to pull a plug on this. And it's a great show. And you see others that are, you know, some of the big Sherry's, this one is filled. This is at capacity. Yeah. She has lightning in a bottle.
She does.
We're getting ready to do another one at ATE in Seattle, which is where I met Gary. A great show. They turn away people.
Didn't you do a keynote there a couple years ago? That's when I heard
the ham radio.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I saw your ham radios in the expo, and I says, I got to know this guy.
Yeah.
And then we ultimately, it took a while, but we got together. I'm going to let that be your last word. You have a last word. Anything else, Gary?
I do. I was listening to Eric being, in my mind, very correct about the paradigm out there between people that choose to study and choose to take a paycheck and work in this business for a paycheck, okay? And one thing I've learned is that to become a master at your craft, the thing that really triggered me about what Eric said is the word craft.
Yeah.
Master craftsman.
Yeah.
To become a master craftsman in any art form whatsoever, whether it be scientific or anything else, takes 68,000 hours, according to the business development study that was done on that. 68,000 hours.
Only Gary would know that statistic.
But think about this, right? I read it in a magazine, and it really struck me, 68,000 hours. So you know what I did? I started calculating it.
How many years?
I got like 72,000 hours in, and I was reading it, and I'm like, how the heck do you ever get 68,000 hours in it? But 20 years of experience gives you 68,000 hours.
If you were working 40 hours a week, it's around, you know, 20,000
right.
or 2,000 some hours a year.
Right.
But
that's when you live it, right? I know I'm violating my last word, but like that's not just, hey, I got off work at 5 o'clock, I'll start again at 8.
No, no.
That's doing the online stuff that's belonging to diag.net, IETN, where all of us met. But you're always continuing that education because you've got that fire in your belly.
Right.
I don't know why I say it often, but if you're not at the top of your craft, you better be a perpetual student. You better keep learning. And what is the top of your craft? To me, in our industry, it's a continuous move. I mean, the bar continues to get
You're higher. Never going to hit the top of your craft.
No, you're never.
You're never going to.
But right? you should strive for it. It should be a BHAG goal, right?
It's a journey, not a destination.
Yeah, right? Exactly right. Last word, my friend.
There was some statement about Middle America, two-hole shops, not having the passion for their craft. And one of the times that I'm disappointed is when I go into those shops. Any one of us can do it and have done it. We go in to solve an issue that they're having trouble with, and the tech might be right there hanging along with us. Do you mind if I watch? Yeah, sure. How did you do that? Well, I used this scope and here, and you have one right there. You need to learn how to use it and so forth. Well, where do I get that training? And they start to kind of light up. And they're like, okay, well, guess what? Next week, vision is happening, and it's a few hours away, or there's another training class online with auto seminars or Diagnation or whatever the case, right? Here's where you go. You give it to them, and you leave the building feeling good about yourself, going, I just helped somebody.
Right.
And then you go back a week or two later, and you go, did you go to that training? Yeah, no.
Yeah.
No, I didn't. And it's like,
maybe because
right?
But maybe because the shop owner didn't want to help, didn't encourage, doesn't have the commitment of the number of hours of training that are necessary to continue here, doesn't have ASC certification, so doesn't see the need for that training because it's not important to the business.
Right.
And on and on. I don't mean to pontificate.
It's not important to the business until you can't make a profit, and then it becomes very important.
But the one refreshing one as of late, not to drop names again, is Eric Dallas from changing gears, that actually came and was like electric to be here. So that was on a suggestion. So there are those one-offs. It would just be great if it was greater body.
Hey, thanks. As we started with no agenda, I don't know where the hell that went, but it was great. Eric Ziegler, Gary Smith, Scott Shotton. Hey, thanks, guys, for being here. Thanks for being my friend.
A pleasure and an honor.
Of course. An honor to be here.
It's great to be
here.
Shout
out to Tracy.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.